Do any of these comments sound familiar to you? I wish I were an only child. You love him more than me. Why does she get to stay out later than I do? Sibling rivalry is a normal part of growing up, but it generates conflict that can be tough for parents to manage. The sibling relationship is also often the first and longest-lasting peer relationship a person experiences. So we learn a lot about negotiation and relationships from our siblings. Welcome to Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quiñones, Executive Director at SCAN of Northern Virginia, and my guest today is Dr. Avedon Milevsky, Associate Professor of Psychology at Kutztown University of Pennsylvania and a psychotherapist at Wellspring Counseling in Towson, Maryland. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Today, we'll discuss the significance of sibling relationships and how we as parents can promote and encourage healthy relationships in the lives of our children. So, Dr. Milevsky, you recently published a book called Sibling Relationships in Childhood and Adolescence, and in your book, you talk about the unique relationship that we have with our siblings. Let's start by describing some of the unique characteristics of that sibling relationship.
So, first of all, you think about all the different relationships that we have. The sibling relationship is really the longest relationship that's possible. So, very often you come in contact with a sibling early on in life. Either you're born into a sibling relationship or a sibling on average joins you pretty early in life. And it can last for about 70, 80 years. And that's the longest relationship when you compare it to the spousal relationship or even parents and children. At some point, they move on to wherever they move on, and we're still here. But it's that sibling relationship that's the longest relationship, which it's ironic considering the fact that we don't really talk much about the sibling relationship, even though it's the longest relationship that we have. The second most important thing about the sibling relationship is that it really is that first relationship that we have with a peer. So we obviously have the parental relationship, and it's a bit of a different relationship in comparison to the give and take that a peer relationship entails. So how do we learn once we get to the real world how to negotiate with people, how to interact with people? The first place you get that is with the sibling relationship. So it's crucial to do it well early on to really learn how to negotiate with people in the future.
Well stated. So your book also focuses on predictors or indicators of sibling relationship quality. So what are some of the most important factors that affect the quality of that sibling relationship?
So a lot of people talk about the gender constellation or the age gap, and that definitely is going to impact it to some degree. So research says that two sisters are going to be the closest in a relationship, and the weakest relationship is going to be an older brother, younger sister, on average. The age component is also going to play a role. So if they're older than you by several years, so they may take on some kind of parental role to the younger child. If they're a bit closer, you may fight a bit more often. But that's really only a small picture of what's impacting the relationship. It's much greater. The greater influence is really coming from what's happening at home. What are they seeing at home? How are parents intervening when the children are fighting? What's the overall sense of warmth at home? So it really is driven by parenting practices much, much more than by gender constellation or age gaps.
And you talk about the outcomes of a close sibling relationship, and you even refer to this relationship as a potential buffer for children whose parents don't provide sufficient positive support or have difficulties with friends or otherwise what we call at risk. Tell us a little bit more about the potential a sibling relationship has to support a child's interactions with the rest of the world.
So there is a lot of interesting research now about this buffering hypothesis, which basically suggests that when children are faced with various challenges in life, they could rely on their sibling to get over these challenges. So there's an interesting body of research on family conflict and divorce, for example. So during divorce proceedings, when things are tenuous by nature, when children have a good relationship with their sibling, they can go to that sibling to receive that sense of support, which it's unfortunate that the laws in our country don't really represent that relationship so much. So, for example, grandparents could go ahead and petition for visitation rights during divorce processes or after. Siblings in the majority of the states in the union don't have that. There's a state representative actually in Pennsylvania now that I'm consulting with that is trying to change that a little bit, that after a divorce process, if there's split custody, well, siblings really rely on each other during this time, and if you're not allowing that from a legal perspective, it really is handicapping them in some way. So allowing children to really have that relationship could get them over very, very difficult life processes. During adoption processes also, research seems to suggest that during adoption and afterwards, having that sibling relationship is a very, very positive component of adjusting to the adoption process. Risk in general, when there's community risk or neighborhood risk. Also, research says that if you have a close relationship with your sibling, you're more likely to deal with these, what's known as ecological risk, in comparison to those who don't have that sibling bond. So yes, research does seem to say that the sibling bond could very much buffer against negative natural stressors that may happen throughout childhood and adolescence.
And I think as parents, that's often what we hope for our kids, that they're going to look out for each other and that they're going to be a support for one another as they deal with the hurdles of childhood and adolescence, but also when they're older, especially if we worry as parents that we may not be able to support our kids in some of those stages. We hope that their sibling relationships will do that.
For sure. And studies do show that it really does last a lifelong. So when there's that positivity early on, then when you reach the adolescent angst, relying on siblings could be positive. And then when you hit young adulthood and some of the challenges with dating potentially and jobs also, and even there's research now about successful aging. Those who have a positive relation with a sibling are more likely to successfully age in comparison to those who don't. So yes, when we as parents work with our children on creating a positive sibling relationship, we really are giving them a lifelong gift.
Beautifully said. If you are just joining us, this is Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quinones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, along with Dr. Avedon Malevsky, and we are talking about sibling relationships. So if this is a goal we have as parents, let's talk about your implications of your research for parents. How can a parent encourage that sibling bonding?
So when I lecture and write about these issues, I like to break it into two different categories of what parents can do. Number one is what's referred to as indirect components. And the other thing is our direct things. So indirect things are like, what kind of family atmosphere do you create? Do you have dinners around the table with the family? How do you communicate with your significant other, with your spouse? That's really serving a model for the children when they're having an issue. So if we are talking nicely to our spouse and we use words like, I'm sorry, I should have been paying more attention, kids see that. And then when they have issues with their siblings, they're going to use the same language and they're going to use that same warmth that they see from you. So, and this is really an indirect thing. You're not actively manipulating their sibling relationship right now, but you're creating a home environment that's conducive for children to have that kind of warmth within their relationships. So these are the indirect things. Then there are more direct things where you're actually navigating the sibling relationship. So things, for example, of making sure you're not favoring one child over the other. We very often talk about it. We don't necessarily verbalize the fact that we do have sometimes some favorites and some less favorites, and that changes with age. So when a kid is giving you a bit of a tough time during that pre-adolescent years, which I'm heavily thick in the middle of this process at home, you may look at children a little differently than the four-year-old who's constantly hugging you and saying, I love you. So it's natural for us to not necessarily favor, but have different feelings towards various children. It's very important that our behavior towards them, they're not picking up on it. So keep it in your heart or in your thought process or as you talk to your significant other about it. But in your behavior towards them, make sure they understand that there's equality in terms of your approach to them. Then there's what is referred to as sibling de-identification. A big word, a lot of research on it, but it's a very crucial process. You want to make sure that children de-identify, meaning they each find their own identity within the family. I know sometimes parents like to dress their kids alike, even if they're not twins. And they like to make sure that they all are in the same sport. If they're on the swim team, then everyone's got to do the swim team. And if it's ballet, everyone's got to do ballet. Studies show that that's not necessarily healthy for children. Children need to find their own identity, figure out where they are in their life, figure out what their natural disposition is, and allow them to go with that. So, for example, if one of them has more of an artistic knack, let them do that. The reason that's healthy is because you're more likely to compare one another or you're more likely to have rivalry if they're involved in the same thing. You're more likely to be jealous of someone in your field in comparison to someone who's doing something totally different than you. So work that into the family system. Make sure that they develop their own identities. They're doing their own things. They're excelling in their own things, which is going to minimize the rivalry. And the final piece is really, once they're actually fighting, what do you do about it? How do you intervene correctly? Intervening correctly is a crucial, crucial component of developing a healthy sibling relationship.
Okay, so how do we intervene correctly when our kids are in conflict? Because you mentioned that this is sort of the breeding ground for learning how to negotiate conflict in a healthy way. So how, as parents, do we make sure that that happens?
So that's the crucial question. The majority of people who interact with me and find out that I'm a sibling researcher, that's the number one question they ask me. As a matter of fact, on the way up here in the elevator, someone asked me that question. That's the big question. How do we intervene? So research tells us the following suggestions. If they're younger, we do intervene. When they're younger, they don't know how to engage each other yet. They don't know how to fight. They don't know conflict resolution strategies. They don't know how to take turns. It doesn't come naturally. So when kids are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and they're fighting, swoop in there. Don't ask the stupidest question a parent could ask, which is who started it, because that's never gonna reach some kind of conclusive conclusion. What you want to try to find out is what really happened here. Let them each talk. Explain to each one of them, listen, I'm going to hear their side first. I will let you talk. And while the other one's talking, don't let the second child interrupt. And they know that you're honest about the fact that you're going to let the other one talk also because you're consistent with it. Get the story straight. Teach them, okay, what could you have done differently? How do you think he or she felt when you did such and such? These are normal processes that we are going to need when we reach adulthood, knowing the other perspective, knowing conflict resolution. They don't know that naturally. They know that when we as parents go in there and teach them this process. But then once kids reach 9, 10, 11, and research does say that there's a bit of a shift in social relationship during that phase, let them now test it out. So you did well as a parent early on in life. You taught them the process. You didn't have these zero tolerance for fighting. It's okay for kids to fight. You don't want it to reach a level of bullying, obviously. Let them fight. Go in there. Teach them how to do it. Then they hit the 10, 11, 12. Let them now do it on their own. Let them now apply the lessons that you taught them and see if they could really navigate that relationship themselves.
And what I hear you saying is even when we're intervening, we're not intervening to fix it or to be judge. We're intervening to help them learn skills to sort of navigate.
Absolutely.
That.
It's about teaching them conflict resolution strategies, not who is right, who is wrong, who do I punish, who is not. It's not about that. You're really serving as a coach. And that's actually the way the research refers to this process. You're a coach teaching them how to actually engage each other in the conflict resolution process.
This has been a very helpful conversation, but we have just about a minute left. Is there one final message you wanted to leave with our listeners this morning?
So first of all, it's important to understand that parents matter. The bottom line is what we do with our kids is going to ensure that they develop a close sibling relationship. And it's parenting across the board, but particularly in the sibling relationship, parents matter. And the second important thing is to remember that parenting is a marathon. You're not going to go ahead and teach something to your children and in 1 week see results. It's hard work. You have to work on it day in, day out, weeks, months, and years. And you hope when they hit the adolescent years or the early adult years, that's when you start seeing the fruit of your labor. You see them joining together and working together as siblings. That's when you know that the hard work you put in early on is really paying fruits.
Sibling relationships do play a pivotal role in family dynamics, and they're crucial to a child's social development. The next time you notice your children arguing, take a moment to listen to their feelings, point out what's really important, avoid making comparisons, and help them build skills to navigate those relationships. Children don't always understand how to resolve a heated argument with their brother or sister, and as parents, it's important to encourage that special bond between siblings. Encourage empathy and understanding in your home, teach respect, model positive communication, and celebrate each child's individuality. Encouraging your children to develop those close bonds with each other helps them feel better about themselves and develop interpersonal skills for interacting with the rest of the world. This has been Parenting Today. I'm Sonia Quinones from SCAN of Northern Virginia, and I want to thank Dr. Avedon Malevsky for joining me to talk about the significance of sibling relationships. Remember, every child and family matters. We all play a critical role in our communities, and we can all become involved in helping families thrive. For more information about developing children's social-emotional skills and other parenting challenges, visit the SCAN website at www.scanva.org.